Do you want to feel happier? Do you want to feel more radiant and more alive? Or to go beyond alive and truly feel like you are thriving? That's what I'm here for. Helping you find that best you that you know is in there. It is. And you can start accessing that you today. It's possible. If you're ready for a shortcut to just that, let's work together. Reach out and let's work one-on-one to transform you and your life into happy, into thriving. Reach out to me and book a quick call. It's in the show notes, and let's get you there. Are you really committed and ready? Then let's do it. Personally, I'm the happiest I've ever been thanks to all the practices that I've made a part of my life. You can be too. It is here for you, I promise. You can also access my course, The Youthfulness Hack, which is all about feeling good and getting radiant and all the things I do concentrated in one spot. Go there today and use code AMY15 for 15% off right now, only for listeners of this show. And if you are truly ready to have accountability and live happy, book a call with me today. The world needs your best. You deserve your best. Hello, and welcome to the Amy Edwards Show. I'm your host, Amy Edwards. So excited that you are here. We are continuing the sex series. I had a little bump in the road last week and did not get a show out. I pride myself on consistency. I didn't get it done last week because this episode, the one I'm about to share with you, lost some of its content. It's a remote interview with an excellent guest. I'm so excited to have it and share it with you. But I lost the beginning of it, and so I have to, here I am right now recording a new intro. And so I was really bummed to lose that. But so it goes, right? That's just the way it goes sometimes. So we switched over to Zoom and we got the rest of the interview done. And I really only missed a few minutes, but my intro got lost. So anyway, I am just thrilled that you're here and I'm thrilled to continue the sex series. After this one, we've got one more in the sex series with Zaya the Oracle, a sex priestess. And I'm so excited to share it. It's so good. So they've all been so incredible and I've learned so much myself. And so I am really excited to take what I've learned that really stands out and share it in a roundup of the whole series. So I'm going to do a solo episode down the road and share everything that I've learned and like listen back to everything. But there's some things that have just really stayed with me that I've been applying to my life. And so I want to share those. So all that said, let's get to today's episode. Oh, hey. Also, I want to mention, if you haven't reviewed the show, I would love to ask you to again. So I am asking. So if you could leave a rating or a review wherever you listen, I'd be so grateful. So thank you so much in advance if you could do that. So let's get to today's episode. Tani Lada, she is the sober sexpert, and she has a book coming out on September 19th called Dry Humping: A Guide to Dating, Relating, and Hooking Up Without the Booze. I love the title so much, so much. So she's a New York City-based writer. She has a weekly advice column called Beyond Liquid Courage. She's an award-winning podcaster. And as I mentioned, she's known as the sober sexpert. She's also a public speaker. And I am so excited to learn all sorts of things about her book, hear how she came to do what she does and be the sober sexpert. And that's what we're going to talk about. The links to everything and to pre-buy the book are all in the show notes. And so let's jump right in. Like I said, we're jumping in about 3 or 4 minutes into our interview, but don't worry. You're not going to have any trouble catching up. You're going to be right where you should be. And I'm so grateful for this interview. Stick around to the end, and she'll tell you a little bit more about her book, too. So thank you so much for being here. I love you so much. Let's get to the episode with Tani Lada.
All right. So I was asking you about just that getting to know yourself again. I don't even know that I was getting to know myself again, because I was just getting to know myself, because everything had alcohol, a tinge of alcohol to it, whether it was sex or whether it was dating, because I hadn't done any of that since before I was, you know, out of high school. Like, I mean, like 14 or something like that. So, I mean, it's really kind of sad to say, but like, it's true. And I'm sure it's true for a lot of people. So it's just that getting conscious of it. And so like, what have you seen turn around in people? I know from my own life how I can answer that, but I'm curious, like, what your response is to that too, for yourself and for others.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you say that, because when I got sober and I entered the dating world, you know, I quit drinking in 2015. So it was a very different, dating was a very different landscape. Yes, dating apps were a thing, but it was nothing like it is now. And I learned that I didn't know how to date, like, at all. I really had to go very 101, because my dates, quote unquote dates back when I drank, were really like people that I met in the bar, and then we would hook up, and sometimes it would be a one night stand, sometimes it would be a regular hookup, sometimes it'd be a long-term relationship and we would move in together, but there was no quote unquote courting. You know, it was very, hey, can I buy you a shot? What do you want to drink? Then we get drunk enough and start making out. So once all of that was quite literally taken off the table, I had to learn how to date, how to get to know people, actually get to know people, and also introduce myself properly. Which is again why I say dating yourself is so important, because I didn't even know who I was on these dates until I took that time to spend time by myself, but also go to therapy, work on my shit, figure out what I drink and how that showed up in my love.
Yeah, I can totally relate too, because I not only had to date myself. I hope you can hear me right now, because you're frozen. So I hope it's working. There it is. Good.
Yeah, frozen and it's a little staticky, but we're okay.
Dang. Okay. Well, I can really relate with that. And I kind of wanted to go ahead and talk about sex with that too, rather than dating, because I even had to have sober sex with myself, and that was really uncomfortable. So what's your experience been with that, and do you recommend people do that too? Because that's a weird
100%. No, it's not weird, and I'm so glad that you went there. You know, part of chapter one of dating yourself, I share this exercise that I did. I'm a freelance writer, so I had this assignment to masturbate in front of a mirror. And I was, I don't know, maybe 6 months sober. I was pretty new. And that was a very, very interesting experience that I go into in the book. But the point of writing about this is the point of doing it, of masturbating in front of a mirror and then writing about it, is to really look at your body and acknowledge your body, notice the anxieties that you're feeling, notice the notice what you like, notice what your body looks like when something feels good, notice what certain parts of your body look like when something feels good. And it helped me with some of my body image issues. I was able to like really love the person that I saw on the mirror, because I was like, this person is pleasing herself. You know, she's doing something really natural and really beautiful, and there's nothing wrong with that. And it was this really healing exercise. And so, you know, in the book, I talk, you know, I guide readers through how to do that as a way to really have sober sex with yourself first, because body image, especially for women, is really tied up in a lot of the reason that we do outsource our confidence to alcohol. For myself and many people that I interviewed, a lot of people were like, well, I drink because I don't like my body and I feel more confident. If I've had a couple drinks in me, I'm better in bed because I'm less inhibited. And it was validating for me to hear that other people felt that way. But it also made me kind of sad that so many of us, like I said, outsource our confidence to alcohol. There's and that's one of the many reasons why you do have to date yourself and have sober sex with yourself first. There's a lot of healing that needs to happen before you bring someone else into the picture.
I love that phrase, outsourcing your confidence to alcohol. Could not be more accurate, you know, and I can completely relate to everything that you just said. And it was, I mean, I just did that myself, that mirror exercise, sober sex with yourself. And I was just shocked at what a vulnerable space that was for me and how outside my comfort zone it was. It's so funny when we think of things outside our comfort zone, like, oh, I'm going to go skydiving, you know, but like sometimes it's like literally right there in your bedroom. It's just like the mirror, you know, and that's such a push. And so I think I'm glad that's in your first chapter. How wonderful. Because it was such a growth exercise for me. And I had that sensation too, like, oh, this is what other people see. You know, why am I having trouble looking in my own eyes? You know? And yet.
Yes. Yes.
Right. And so anyway, so that's so cool. And so I don't think that I had consciously associated that with sobriety, but what a wonderful way to come back to yourself, like for real. And so what's the progression from there if you want to embrace more sober sex, let's say, if someone's listening to this?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, in the 12-step world, I didn't go through the 12 steps or AA, but they recommend being single for the first year that you're sober because you've got to work on your shit. I don't think they say it like that, but that's how I say it. So, you know, I think getting to know your own body is just one of the many things that is essential in that dating yourself section. You know, dating myself in early sobriety also looked like I took a lot of classes. I took writing classes. I studied improv. I studied Spanish. Like, I had a surplus of time because I wasn't drinking. And I had a surplus of money because I wasn't going to the bar and drinking until I blacked out on a regular basis, which is really expensive. So I used that time and that money to enrich myself. I learned more about writing. I learned more Spanish, and I met like-minded people, which I think was essential for my early sober journey because I didn't necessarily meet other sober people, but I met people outside of the bar, which was a revelation for me. And those people, we had a shared interest, whether it was writing or studying Spanish or whatever, take a pottery class, you know, like whatever you're interested in, you're going to have this fun, enriching activity, and you're going to make friends that are also interested in that thing. You might even get a date out of it, you know? But that's not the point. You're doing this to really date yourself. So I would say, you know, that could be the next step, is figuring out, you know, what's that thing you've always wanted to do, and use your surplus of time into doing that thing.
Yeah, totally. And I think just adjacent to that, you know, I've noticed how many people were just drinking buddies of mine, and those relationships kind of just naturally fell away, you know, and not like I don't love them. I do. But that was all we were doing. That was what we had in common. Right. You know, so I totally get that. Yeah. So, well, what happened after your first? Did you stay single for a year? Are you still single?
No, I have a wonderful partner. We've been together for almost 5 years, and he is also sober. So I'm very, very grateful for that. I was single for a long time, but I dated probably a couple months into my sobriety. I didn't get into anything serious, until I met my partner and I was 3 years sober. Or like 2.5 years sober, but I dated and I hooked up, and, but it, you know, it was healthier. You know, the dates were healthier because, like I said, I was actually dating instead of just drinking and hooking up with people. Nothing wrong with that. I am not shaming anybody who does that. My work and this book in particular really examines, it's not for having, you know, people that have one drink. This conversation is really, if you're drinking in excess, if you are relying on alcohol for confidence, if you are relying on liquid courage to get you through a challenging moment, that's what this conversation is. So I do just want to be very explicit about that. And also, you know, in the book, I talk about alcohol has something called a biphasic quality, which is there's two phases. The first phase is when you have one drink, maybe two, and you just relax. You're a little more, you're a little more relaxed. You're a little bit more social. That's not really where the work, that's really not the target audience. The target audience is like people that are like desperate for that one or two drinks to change them into a more social, confident person, if that makes any sense.
It totally makes sense. Yes. Because like do you have to have it? Like, do you have to?
Yes.
Right.
Exactly.
And then like, what is that indicating to ourselves? You know, I think if I probably sat with that, I could probably answer it, but I want to ask you.
Well, I mean, so like, well, what is the question exactly?
The question is like, when you have to have that, what's really underneath that?
Yes. And I love that you asked that because so many people, myself included, think in order for they think they know what a drinking problem looks like. And it's because of what we see on screen, on film and television and in the media. We see alcohol abuse portrayed as binge drinking until you black out, alcohol causing you to lose your home, you lose your family. Like we see these really extreme cinematic portrayals of what alcohol abuse looks like. And those are absolutely correct. But what we're not seeing is when you do rely on that one drink to get through something that's really hard. That can also be an unhealthy relationship with alcohol. And I think I had to learn that on my own because I compared my relationship with alcohol to other people's relationship with alcohol when I still drank. I was like, oh, I don't have a problem. I don't drink like he does. I can handle my liquor way better than she can. So when I'm comparing my relationship with alcohol to someone else's, I failed to see how problematic it was in and of itself. So I didn't need alcohol every single day. I didn't wake up and start drinking. You know, I could go weeks, months without it. I didn't, but mm-hmm. I was not physically dependent on alcohol. And I think that's important to talk about because we don't hear that often enough. We didn't have the word sober curious when I quit drinking, but that's 100% what I was. I saw that alcohol was negatively impacting my creativity. And so that I took a break and I stopped. And here we are almost 8 years later. My theory was correct. So I would say that that's a really long answer to your question of like, what's underneath. I discovered what was underneath that longing was anxiety, depression, PTSD, all of these undiagnosed mental health issues that I struggled with. I self-medicated with alcohol. And until I quit drinking and I started therapy, I didn't have any of the tools or the language to understand or even name that discomfort that I felt because I just wanted to drink it away.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was getting at too. It's basically this way of coping and not really dealing with the real issue, you know, and not even taking the time. It's almost just like, okay, well, you know what, I'll deal with it later, you know, and just, yeah, you just need to get that drink. And I can completely relate to everything you said too, because I was the same way. I was like totally functional And also compared myself. I know that I had a significant relationship in my life that I think I chose because that person was a bigger drinker than me. So it made me feel like I'm doing fine, you know? And I think that that's just being willing, that's the consciousness of it, just being willing to take a moment to say, like, oh, hey, maybe I actually am really dependent on this, right? And so how do you break that cycle? What are you telling people to do to break that cycle? Because not only are we talking about dating, but we're talking about, you know, in the bedroom too.
Yeah, I mean, and this is such a huge question, and I hate to be that person, but the answer is going to be so different for everyone. I would say if you think that you want to change your relationship with alcohol, I'm not saying if you want to give up alcohol forever. I'm saying if you want to change your relationship with alcohol, I highly, highly, highly recommend therapy and finding a peer support group, because figuring this shit out on your own is really hard. And there's no reason to do it alone, especially in the information age when there are so many books and podcasts and newsletters, and just there's so much free information out there for you. So even, you know, doing the work can, if you're not ready for therapy, maybe you buy a book about getting sober. Maybe you, like, highly recommend Ruby Warrington's Sober Curious. She does such a good job of really tapping into the community of people who want to drink less, they don't want to go to an AA meeting and say, I'm an alcoholic, but they want to change something. And that group of people was largely ignored. And now we have a word for it. And I think that she's truly changed the world with giving us the term sober curious. I would start there. I would get her book or listen. I would get the book Sober Curious, or I would listen to her podcast also called Sober Curious. And if you don't feel comfortable going to therapy, I would talk to someone that you love, that you trust. Like, hey, like, I don't know, like something just feels up with the way that I drink, the relationships I'm getting into, I keep getting into the same fight. I keep picking the same men, you know, whatever feels present to you, I would confide in a loved one, because even just verbalizing that can be profoundly impactful. Impactful on you.
Excellent advice. Thank you. Yes. Let me ask you what your initial experiences were. Let me ask you this. Let me back up a little bit. Were you having any sober sex before you stopped drinking? And then what happened afterward sexually for you? And how has that changed and shifted?
I would say, yes, I had sober sex, but it was only once I was in a long-term relationship with somebody, and it was, you know, in the morning or afternoon or something. But again, those relationships started in bars. Our dates were typically in bars. It was a boozy relationship. So yes and no. I never went on a date. I didn't even go on dates without alcohol. So I never had a one night stand without alcohol or nothing like that at all.
Same. And then, so when you did start having sober sex, not just with yourself, but with a partner, then like, how was that feeling and what have you discovered in those spaces? Because I know I've discovered a lot in those spaces too. So I've only been with one partner since I've been, because I can relate to everything that you just said. That's same. And so now I'm in a relationship, and that's when I stopped drinking. And so I've been really surprised, like orgasmically, it's like completely opened up, and I'm thinking those two things coincide, and just like my sensitivity to my body and my openness have really surprised me. So what have you found, and maybe what have you found from other people?
Well, there's two things there. So there's, you know, mentally and physically. So we'll start with mentally. I was and am still much more communicative with sexual partners about how I felt. And by that, I mean, I would tell someone, hey, this is the first time I've had sex without alcohol, or I'm new to sober sex. I need to take this slow. You know, I would have never, ever, ever stood up for myself like that when I drank. So that, and I think that and I'm aware that it takes a level of confidence to speak up for yourself like that in bed, especially for women. And I wouldn't have had that confidence if I didn't spend time working on myself before I had sex, before I had sober sex. So there is that, you know, it really is a filter. I think sobriety for me is really a filter of people that I would go on dates with and people that I would hook up with. When I was drunk, my standards were very, very low. And now that I'm sober, my standards are really high. Those were the perks. And then physically, you know, alcohol is a depressant. So while we might think that drunk sex is better because maybe it's calming our anxiety or we do have a little boost of that liquid courage, we need to keep in mind that it is depressing our central nervous system. And that means that it is negatively impacting the way that you feel pleasure. It can cause excess alcohol abuse, can cause erectile dysfunction. It can cause vaginal dryness. It can cause, it can reduce your pleasure, because, you know, if you're drinking alcohol to reduce anxiety, it doesn't stop at the brain. I mean, it affects your whole body. So if you're being touched while you're intoxicated, you're not really feeling it to the full capacity. And that was really mind blowing to me. And I think that answers your question about orgasmically, how your sex life has changed orgasmically, because you're actually feeling sex now, you know, like, mm-hmm. You're feeling it on so many different sensory levels, when you weren't feeling it before.
Totally. I mean, yeah. And I didn't think about that. About when you hear depressant, I thought it meant like depressed. I've really like thought about this and study, but yeah, depressing your central nervous system. Like that's what it's doing. You're not as sensitive. That's so interesting and so good. Are you ready to up-level your pleasure practice? I have in mind, and the main things that have helped me are the tools that I've found from Wands. Wands creates luxurious products that encourage us all to honor our body, celebrate our sexuality, and live in pleasure, with more pleasure all the time. One of my favorites, if you listen to this show, then you probably already know, is the Cervix Wand. Wands has trademarked their number one best-selling glass pleasure wand. It's for vaginal and anal de-armoring, and it's designed for cervical and G-spot stimulation. And let me tell you, it's incredible. It's helped thousands of women become more connected to their bodies and their pleasure, and supports them to heal pelvic pain through self-yoni massage and helps awaken more pleasure. Just recently, I've ordered the Venus Wand, another trademarked wand from Wands, and it's designed to activate and awaken the G-spot and more. Also, don't miss one of their new offerings, which are free bleed blankets that can be used as waterproof intimacy blankets. They have a beautiful selection now available. But take a look around at wands.com, that's WAANDS, because they have a huge selection of incredible items like yoni eggs, crystal pleasure wands in amethyst, black obsidian, anything that your heart desires, and so much more. Check them out at wands.com. That's WAANDS.com. And use my link in the show notes to get 10% off, or simply enter my code Amy Edwards at checkout. Again, that's WAANDS, wands.com. Y'all, I have started using higher dose products, and I am such a fan. You know, I don't put anything on this podcast that I am not 100% completely behind. And I have a special discount code for you for all higher dose products. I'm so excited. If you don't know, Higher Dose is a wellness company. They have wellness tech products, they have tools, they have supplements, and they have body care. They have so many things that are hot right now too, that are really biohacking and up-leveling our lives at home, which is really cool. They have an infrared sauna blanket. They have an infrared PEMF mat that I'm so excited to be sharing about soon. One of my favorites, though, is the red light face mask. It stimulates collagen, it activates glowing skin, reduces fine lines, regenerates cells, and it's soft. It's not like one of the hard plastic ones, so you can kind of move it around on your body, which I've been doing, and I am seeing amazing results. I am absolutely addicted to it. I use it every single night, and I'm using it in conjunction with one of their other products, the Glow Serum. And I'm very picky about what I put on my skin, and I am loving the Glow Serum. It's specially formulated to plump and hydrate and stimulate radiant skin, which that's the goal. They have a ton of other products too, magnesium ingestibles, magnesium body care, which has a healing oil and a serotonin soap that you can use in your bath, which I've been using too. It boosts your mood, enhances your skin, and deepens your detox, gets you calmed down. Anyway, I'm a fan. So I'm so excited to offer you 15% off using my code MAGIC15. Go to the show notes. You can click through on the link right there. Or if you go to Higher Dose, just enter the code MAGIC15 and you'll get 15% off. Higher Dose has been featured in Goop, Glamour, Elle, Vogue, Bazaar, Allure, basically you name it. And there's a reason why. So go check it out. It's at higherdose.com and enter my code MAGIC15 for 15% off. And I just want to point out too, to anybody listening, that you can do this at any age. Like I literally yes. did it, right? Like I'm 50. And so, you know, this is a whole new thing for me in this decade of my life. And so, you know, I'm curious how you've seen people at all different ages.
Yeah. I mean, I'm 37 and I got sober at 30, and I've interviewed people of all different ages, gender, sexuality. Like I said, sober curious, still drink. I wanted as diverse of a book that I could write. I really wanted all these different perspectives, and some, you know, slightly tangential, but something that I found super fascinating. And my research was, I read a lot about asexuality, and I interviewed several asexual people, and what they all had in common was that they got sober, and then they realized, like, well, let me back up a bit. They got sober, and then they realized that they used alcohol to try to make themselves feel normal, quote unquote normal, trying to make themselves like sex. And while I'm definitely not asexual, I totally related to that impulse of relying on alcohol to make me feel a different way to get through a sexual experience. And once these handful of people of asexual people that I interviewed explained to me that once they got sober, they were able to fully embrace their asexual identity, I found that to be so profound, because it was just so relatable that they were using alcohol to try and be normal, you know? And then they get sober and they spend time alone and they learn how to love themselves. And then they can take claim and pride in saying, no, I'm asexual. And that just really blew my mind.
That blows my mind too. Wow. You know, but they're able to get, it's like what we were talking about in the very beginning. It's just that learning to love yourself. And maybe that doesn't mm-hmm. even, maybe that's like your sex isn't even part of the equation necessarily, like for someone, like it takes
exactly.
all types.
And like, and I think that, you know, when I interviewed them, that really changed the trajectory of my book. And it really taught me that sexual liberation can mean, you know, maybe like when I heard the term sexual liberation, I thought of like going to sex parties and having orgies and like, you know, freeing the nipple, like doing yeah. all this really, like really extravagant stuff. But this research really taught me that sexual liberation just means you're finding freedom in your sexuality. And that can mean realizing you don't like sex at all.
That almost like, I, as you were saying that, I just felt my heart and like my eyes, like I just felt like crying. Like that's really beautiful for a lot of people, you know, just being able to embrace like who you truly are, whatever that means. Because I think when just what you said about sexual liberation, yeah, we think of the 60s and, or something, and 70s and like, you know, free sex for everybody.
Free
or
love.
Something. Yeah, free love, like that whole thing. And it's redefining the meaning. No wonder it changed the trajectory of your book. Like, how did that, so what did that shift in like your writing or your take, or, I mean, was it just that, was it just like, this can mean anything?
Yeah. I mean, it really showed me that I think like collectively as a society, we are embracing that so many things exist on a spectrum, you know, gender and sexuality and alcohol use disorder, all of this stuff exists on a spectrum. So I think I just see sexual liberation as a spectrum, and the word liberation, it just means you're free, you're liberating yourself from societal expectation. And that can mean realizing you don't like sex. It can mean, you know, for me, it's meant that like penetrative sex actually is not my favorite. And a lot of the times that I did engage in penetrative sex, it was performative because I thought that that's what I should like. And now I'm learning other positions and how to communicate with my partner. You know, actually, I'm not in the mood for penetrative sex tonight. Like, what else do you want to do? And again, I would have never, ever, ever advocated for my own pleasure like that if I was still drinking.
It's freeing up this whole definition. It's just, that's what the liberation is. It's just freeing up this whole definition. I love it. How long did it take you to speak up for yourself like that? Do you feel like it was just more of a gradual thing? Like once you did it, you've got more confidence in it and it's like a muscle?
Really, it really is a muscle. And it's, like I said, I'm almost 8 years sober. My partner and I have been together almost 5 years, and I'm still learning how to do it. You know, like, from the very first time I had sober sex, when I told someone, this is my first time doing this without alcohol, I want to go slow, I'm a little nervous. That was huge for me. Mm-hmm. To now being able to tell my partner, you know, I don't want to do this tonight. How about this? You know, like that's pretty new for me. And I think for me, it's refreshing to remember that, you know, sexuality evolves. You don't have to just stick to the same tricks. You can learn, you can play. You know, sex is supposed to be fun. It is supposed to be a fun way to enjoy yourself or enjoy the company of others, you know, like that's really all it should be. And if you and your partner would rather just do mutual masturbation instead of intercourse, that's sex. Like that counts as sex, you know? So, and I think for me, I needed to hear other people say that in order for me to, I guess, accept that, you know?
Yeah, I think that's really common because we've probably been raised in a society or something where it's like, this is it. This goes in the hole, you know? And so it's that's the liberation part of it, is just being like, oh, I was told this and it's actually something completely different. And that's, I mean, just like when I think back to, you know, all the things I've been shown culturally or learned or told or whatever, it's just not subscribing anymore to all these definitions that we've been fed.
I love that. Like unsubscribe. Like, you know, how you're like, God, I'm still subscribed to that newsletter. Like unsubscribe. It's like, if this school of thought is no longer serving you, like you can unsubscribe from it. You know, like I think a big part of my own sexual liberation in sobriety was unlearning a lot of the shit that we've been taught, especially as women. Like growing up reading Cosmo, if you don't have sex with your man 3 times a week, he's gonna leave you, or he's gonna look for sex elsewhere. And like that really damaged me. And I, again, changing your definition of sex, like I thought that meant I had to have physical intercourse 3 times a week. in order to keep another person happy. But no, none of those magazines ever asked me what I wanted. They never asked me to sit down and think, well, what do I want? What does a healthy sexual relationship look like to me? Because for some people, it might mean sex once a month. For some people, it's once a day. And kind of like I said, to stop comparing your relationship with alcohol to other people's relationships with alcohol, you have to do the same thing when it comes to sex and relationships. Your relationship will not look like your best friend's relationship. Your sex life will not look like your best friend's sex life. So you have to really take it at face value. What is my relationship? What is my sex life? What's working and what isn't?
Do you have some exercises that you recommend to people when they're exploring sober sex together? Like some particular things that you're like, here's some ways that you can discover what yours looks like?
Yeah, there's a lot of that is in the book, where it's like, I give people some conversation starters. There's some journal prompts of like talking about what we just, like what you, the chapter you just read, like there's journal prompts that help you process what you just read, which was I included those in the book because those were super helpful exercises to me. And I really think that communication is the most important thing. So if you can, you know, maybe, you know, if you're struggling with asking for something in the bedroom, let's say, I would say journaling about it. Journal or meditate or go for a walk and discuss, talk in therapy, like really explore that and sit with that. Like, well, what do you want in bed? And maybe making a list. What do you want in bed? Write down why you're not having that in bed.
Yeah.
Why is this thing that you want not happening? And a big part of that is realizing that our partners are not mind readers. We really do have to tell them what we want. And we have to, you know, again, going back to the very beginning of the conversation, we have to spend enough time alone to figure out what we actually want. Even if you're in a relationship, you still have to spend a good amount of time alone with your body, with your thoughts, figuring out what you want, because then you're going to naturally develop this organic confidence that'll give you those tools to ask for it in bed.
Totally agreed too, because I think even with myself, I've had times where I was stuck in a way of thinking like, oh, this is what I'm supposed to do, you know, like, okay, yeah, stick this in, you know, rather than taking time to like touch myself or explore my body or even do something that I had never tried before with myself.
Yeah.
And that still surprises me, because sometimes you don't know what you don't know. You know what I mean?
Like, yes, exactly. And I mean, you could even start small. If the thought of exploring your own body or asking for what you want in bed feels too big right now, you'd be surprised how many people are afraid to speak up when it comes to the restaurant you go to for dinner, you know, like, or the movie that you want to watch. Yeah. I would start there, like make a declarative statement. Like, I want pasta tonight. Like, even if your partner really wants sushi, I really want pasta. Can we have sushi tomorrow? Like, really stand up for yourself like that. Or if you really want to see a movie and your partner doesn't, talk about it, you know, maybe you guys will actually pick a new movie that neither of you thought that you wanted to watch. So it's like, it's these little kernels. You have to start small, advocate for yourself in these small, simple, these ways that seem small, but they're really not. A lot of people that I interviewed, including myself, realized that people pleasing was a big part of my addiction. I was way more concerned with other people's happiness than my own. So I really had to do these little baby steps that I'm talking about, just to even eat the meal that I wanted to eat, let alone have the sex I wanted to have.
Me too. Me too. Totally. I think that's really common, and I'm glad you brought it up. And I think what you just said is such a good example of how this isn't just about sex. You know, this is like about all these things like cross over and overlap, like whether it's in our regular life or whether it's in our sex life, like though we're learning in both ways and they feed off of each other, right?
Yes, they do. And I mean, like you said, yes, we're talking about sex and dating here, but apply this to friendships. Apply this to, you know, if you and your friend always go to happy hour on Fridays and you don't want to do happy hour this week, suggest something else. If, you know, because like these little moments can ultimately help you have better relationships with your family, with your friends, with your loved ones. At work, maybe you'll eventually develop enough confidence to ask for a raise or a job transfer or quit your job altogether and do something that you really want to do. But you have to start small. And I think that is what the biggest turnoff is, because we rely on liquid courage because it's fast, it's easy, it's cheap, it has really quick results. But like we've all learned, there's no quick weight loss. There's no quick get rich quick scheme. None of it, anything that can be achieved in 5 minutes is usually not gonna last. So you have to embrace that. There is no direct replacement for liquid courage. Like you really have to just accept that, like the replacement is doing the work. And that can be deeply unattractive. And I totally acknowledge that, which is why I encourage people to start small.
And deeply unattractive and deeply uncomfortable. Because
yes,
when you brought up people pleasing, I thought of this quote that I read a while back, and it was like, people pleasing is lying. And that hit me because I was like, it really is. I'm not being honest. And those are all little spaces where you can get more honest. And that's, for me, like, that's a reframe that has really stuck. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is about me being really honest. Like ultimately, all of it.
I'm glad that you brought up honesty, because that ultimately is what's going to, it's going to sound really corny, but that honesty is really what's going to save you. You know, like once I was honest with myself about having an unhealthy relationship with alcohol, I was able to finally be honest with myself about so many other things, which ultimately helped me have a healthier, happier life in general.
That's it, right? It's the healthy, happy life in general. And like, there's just all these little spaces. That's why I think it's neat that you brought up it's cool that you brought up the like finding, like in dinner, or like, am I really speaking my truth? Because I've noticed like that so many times I'm trying, or I have in the past tried to manage the situation, and you know, and like, I don't know if alcohol relates to this at all, but like just honesty wise, like I'll catch myself like, oh, I'm not quite being as honest there because I'm kind of trying to manage the situation, and that's not honest.
Yeah, that is so real. And you were so spot on when you were talking about how people pleasing is lying. It's, you know, and people pleasing can, you know, that's a whole other conversation, but it really is, you know, in early sobriety, I had a friend tell me, she was very frank, and I appreciated it. She was just like, you know, like you always say that you're okay with wherever we go to dinner, but like, I really want to know where you want to eat. Like, I don't always want to do the legwork. I don't always want to figure out where we're going. I don't always want to make the reservation. Like, I really would love if you could help me out with that. And that was so helpful for me to hear, because I thought by quote unquote going with the flow that I was being easier. And I actually wasn't. I was creating more work for this person that I really care about. So, you know, if you could also think about that reframe as like, people pleasing is lying, and you're putting more work on someone else.
Oh, that's so good. I love that. Yeah. I had another thought about, you know what? And then there's also that thing about people pleasing with having the drink itself.
Yes.
You know, like, do you touch on that in the book?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, part of the conversation starters, or even like conversation templates that I have, is when you know, you're just because you quit drinking, your immediate circle isn't always going to get it. You're still going to be offered drinks. So it's really how to handle those moments, how to handle those conversations. And like you mentioned earlier, how to discern your drinking buddy from your real friends.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I just wanted to pop that in there while we were talking about people pleasing, but I also liked what you said about making more work for somebody. There's something really nice about having your own opinions and speaking up. And it doesn't mean you want things to go your way necessarily, but you are at least participating in what's going on rather than, and I think that might be part of the, you know, honesty and sobriety, is that you probably saying you don't care when you really don't care. Okay. But saying you don't care when maybe you're harboring a tiny opinion about something is again, a space to excavate more honesty.
Yes. Yeah. I love that. I think doing these seem little, but they're not, but standing up for yourself in these simple ways, like picking a restaurant, picking the movie, or even not picking, but just expressing your desire. I'm really craving pasta tonight. How does that sound? If they're not craving pasta, that's totally fine, but you've at least said that you're craving it, and you might pick a totally different restaurant together. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like little things like that, they will stack up, they will add up, and they will really help you feel more confident. If you can declare that you want pasta tonight, you might be able to later on in the bedroom declare that there's something that you want to try that you've been thinking about trying in the bedroom.
Man, I can't agree more. Like, I love that this is where we've gone in this conversation, because those moments present themselves all the time, and they're actually foundational building blocks that we can just like use all the time. Like, these little moments are presenting themselves all the time, and we don't have to wait for some grand, like, I don't know, bedroom scene where we're declaring something, right? It's like, these are the things that build who we are and our honesty. Mm-hmm. and feeling in that sobriety, which has kind of been just really exciting for me personally, like finding those spaces and then like understanding that I can grow like in every moment. I don't have to wait. Like, it can be simple.
Yeah.
Not little, but I like that you pointed that out. Yeah.
You really can. And then it's, you know, it's also this delicate balance of like, you can grow. And there's also these moments that I also had to accept that there are some things that are just who I am, you know, like, you don't have to change everything about yourself. You shouldn't change everything about yourself. So it really takes a lot of work to figure out what you need to accept about yourself versus what needs a little bit of massaging.
What did you discover about yourself that's just you?
That's a good question. You got me. What did I just
I got you. You're such a pro. So it was like, I'm curious.
You know, there's this great paradox when it comes to personal growth of like, once you accept something about yourself, that's when the change can happen. So, you know, for me, there was, like, codependency was and is a really, really big part of my recovery. And by that, I mean, thinking that it's my responsibility to manage every situation, manage everyone's emotions, manage all of the activities. It's all up to me. Like, it is my responsibility to manage the whole world. Mm-hmm. And it sounds so silly when you say it out loud. So once I accepted that this is something about myself, but this is something that I do. Controlling situations is something that I do. Then I was able to name it and get into Al-Anon, talk about it in therapy, read all of these books about codependency, and figure out, you know, when it's actually helpful that I control situations. Because, you know, it actually taught me that controlling things and coordinating things is a strength of mine. And so finding healthy ways to express that you know, like in event coordination, having a podcast, coordinating guests on my podcast, stuff like that, that has become a strength. And that is a proper way for me to manage certain things. And then I've also had to learn what is not appropriate for me to manage. So I think, I don't know, is that a good
answer? I love that. Yeah, okay. I think that's a really cool answer. And it also is a cool way of looking at things that we typically perceive as negatives and turning it around to understand that, again, and this is very you, is like understanding that everything's a spectrum, right? And so It doesn't have to be all bad, and it doesn't need to be. Like there's these good aspects too, which leads me to my next question. Like, when you look back on your life before you were sober, are you able to find gratitude and the good things about that and look back and be like, I'm so glad I experienced that because it's helped me today to help people, or whatever it is for you?
Oh yeah, 100%. You know, I'm able to say alcohol got me through some really, really shitty times. And I didn't, like I said, when I got sober, I received, you know, my diagnosis for anxiety and PTSD. And I now have these tools, and I have this big toolbox full of things that I do when I feel anxious. But I didn't have that before. I had alcohol before. And I don't know that I would have survived certain situations if I didn't have that. And I think that's important to acknowledge, you know? And it also helps me give myself grace that I, like you said earlier, you don't know what you don't know. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what the hell I was doing. I didn't know the name for these feelings that I had, but I knew that when I drank this thing, I felt better. So I can look at myself, you know, I can look at myself with kinder eyes and some tenderness and see like, wow, she was really struggling. She really needed help. I'm so glad she found it.
I think that's a cool way to just reframe shame too. It's like when you didn't have those tools. You didn't know. So like, you're able to go like, you know what? I did the best with what I could. And that was a tool that was handy right then. And that other people had used and I saw them using, and I was like, all right, you know,
exactly. Yeah.
Do you have some things about coping with shame? And maybe it's along those lines in your book.
Yeah, I mean, there's a great deal of shame and guilt and anxiety, all sorts of stuff is going to come up when you look in the mirror. Let's be real. Mm-hmm. You're going to see some stuff that you've chosen to ignore, whether consciously or subconsciously. And that can be really, really difficult. That is why I strongly encourage everyone to, if therapy is an option for you, highly recommend, and not just talk therapy. There's all different types of therapy, you know, peer support. You need to have somebody to talk these things out with. That is, it's crucial. Like it's absolutely crucial. You're not like, I dare I even say you're not going to get your shit together unless you have at least one person to talk about this stuff with.
And I suppose maybe the flip side of that coin is the listening part of it, right? And then maybe I'm curious about, you know, how your listening has developed with your partner, or, you know, maybe people that you work with or have advised, how that's looked and helped them.
Yeah, I mean, just, I would say, I'm present now. I am present and I am fully plugged into reality.
And, there you go. Yeah.
And, you know, wonderful things can come from that. Also, some really scary, shitty things come from that. But I'm a way better listener, way better daughter, friend, niece. Like, I'm far from perfect. Don't get me wrong. But I'm present and I know how to show up for people now. And, you know, listening, like here's, you know, another example of like, you know, if someone calls me and they're like going through it, they're going through something. The first thing I say is, do you just want me to listen? or do you want advice? Because before I would just pour out all this advice, whether someone wanted it or not. Sometimes people really just want a sounding board and that's it. So having that tool, just having that tool to ask what they want from me has also been so beneficial for me, because there would be times when I would feel frustrated with a friend, like, well, I told them what to do and they didn't listen to me.
Like, I'm a professional, for God's sake.
Yeah, like who the hell am I to give, you know, like, they didn't even ask for advice. They just said they're going through this thing. And that, I think that has helped me be a better friend for sure.
Oh, that's really beautiful. I think I love that. And that's something I've tried to lean into more myself. Tell me right now, do you have any times when you want to drink come up, and how those look for you?
I'm going to piggyback off my previous comment real quick and say,
yeah.
I also do the same thing when reaching out to someone for help. I'll text someone and I'll say, hey, I'm having a shitty day. Do you have the space to listen or give me advice right now? Because before, I would just call and just go off, whether this person was able to even be there for me. And I love that I can ask that now, because if someone's like, you know, I'm having a really shitty day. I just can't really do that right now. I know that. Like that helps our relationship, because I'm not just dumping my shit on them. I'm respecting that they are their own person. They don't just exist to be my friend. They have their own stuff going on. So I just wanted to clarify that goes both ways.
Oh, I love that so much, because I've definitely experienced that. And
yeah.
You know, maybe you aren't having the best day and you're just like, and you can get really annoyed too, you know? So such a conscious way to like, and then not being annoyed with the person, like, and you know, it might pull you out of your own funk and be like, oh, well, are you okay? You know,
like, exactly. Like, I mean, that is a really big part of it, is like getting out of your own head. Here, calling a friend and asking how they are doing can actually, obviously it's going to help your friend, but it's really going to help you, because you're reminded, oh yeah, there's so much other shit going on other than this thing I'm dealing with.
Yeah. Agreed. So I feel like we're getting kind of close on time. So I think I just want to ask you, what are the most beautiful benefits that you have gotten out of, and your community has gotten out of, sober sex?
I would say, I think, yeah, honesty and clear communication. And by that, I mean, being honest with yourself. That has helped me in my relationship with my partner. When I've interviewed people, they've said the same thing. It's just, it really is, once you get honest with yourself about something, it's kind of hard to keep lying about the other things.
Isn't that what intimacy is, really?
It's
that deep.
It really is. Like, I mean, I learned the difference between sex and intimacy for sure. I ran from intimacy, but I jumped into sex when I drank. And now it's really the opposite. I find that, you know, I crave intimacy time with my partner way more than the physical. And sometimes just being intimate with him can be so fulfilling and so emotionally warming and beneficial. When before I would count the times we had intercourse, and then I would rank our relationship is not doing well because we've only had intercourse this many times. Like, what the hell does that even mean? Like, why am I, like, my therapist says, mm-hmm. why are you using sex as a barometer for your relationship's happiness? And she was right. Like, there's no reason for me to do that. There is just, sex is such a small part of a relationship. You know, there's trust, there's honesty, there's communication, there's fun, there's dates, there's family, there's children, there's pets. There's like, there's like you and your partner are individual humans out that have come together. So you have all this other stuff going on and you have to keep that into perspective. And yes, sex can be important, but all this other stuff is important too. And just don't put that much weight on sex. And again, define what sex means to you and your partner. That I think that would be like my big takeaway. If you're listening, like figure out what sex means to you and what you want it to mean, and then talk to your partner about that.
That can be such a scary space for so many people, because they're just like, am I still going to be loved and accepted, you know?
Yeah, all of this is scary, right? I mean, like I said, looking in the mirror can be really, really scary sometimes.
Do you have like a mirror self-love practice, like regularly?
You know, I don't, and I've been thinking that I should. I saw a play recently where the guy talked about how every morning he starts his day saying, like looking in the mirror saying, I love you, and you're amazing, you're beautiful, and just these really kind things he said to himself in the mirror every morning. And I was like, wow, like I want to find my own version of that. Do you have something like that?
I do it every day. Mm-hmm.
yeah
and it's gone along with all the rest of this work, and now I just talk so much more kindly to myself, and I do it every day, and I'll look at myself in the eye, and then I reconfigured, I'm a Reiki master, and so I reconfigured the Reiki, there's a Reiki like mantra or whatever, the Reiki slogan, and I just reconfigured it, and I say that every day. I didn't like theirs. It was like, just for today, I will not anger, and stuff like that. And I was like, and so I say, just for today, I am at peace. Just for today, I will work easy. Just for today, I show appreciation and gratitude. And just for today, I'm kind to all living things, including myself. And then I say, I love you, and I'm kind. I take a moment to be kind to myself and look at myself in the eyes. So, yeah, it's a daily practice, but that's why I ask, because it just seems to go along with all this growth, you know? So maybe this is it. Maybe this is your little prompt to do that.
I love that. No, that's really beautiful. And your face lights up when you're describing this practice. So that's really cool to see.
I guess it's infused with love. Thank you. That's very kind. I appreciate that. thank you. Is there anything that we missed or anything you really wanted to go over today before we end?
No, I just, thank you so much for having such a beautiful conversation and sharing this with your listeners. I mean, I obviously think it's an important conversation. I wrote a book about it, but, I think more people need to talk about the role that alcohol plays in their lives. You know, that I'm not anti-alcohol. I don't think everyone needs to be sober. I don't think that at all. But I think everyone can benefit from being mindful about the role that alcohol plays in their lives.
Yeah, agreed. That's why I'm doing this, and I'm walking the walk too, just so I can speak firsthand, you know, as you are, you know, we're able to really come from our heart and say, this is what I'm doing in my life, and this is the results that I'm getting, and it can help you grow. And so I just want to say thank you. Everybody can check out your new book, Dry Humping, A Guide to Dating, Relating, and Hooking Up Without the Booze. It comes out September 19th, and I will have a link in all the show notes so everyone can not only find you, but order your book, pre-order, or if they're listening later in the fall, go ahead and order it. So congratulations on the book. I'm so happy for you. Like, congratulations. It's so exciting. And you're just putting such good out into the world that can help so many people. That liberation piece, just wow, right?
Good. And thank you for sharing that. It's always good to hear like what little nuggets stick with people, you know, and the liberation piece, I probably think about that every day of like, because I still have these habits, these old school habits that I'm still trying to unsubscribe from. I'm going to steal that. I'm going to use that.
Use it. It's all yours.
Yeah. And then I guess, speaking of subscribing, I have a weekly advice column where I answer questions about sober sex and dating, called Beyond Liquid Courage. So if anybody wants to submit a question or read that weekly column, it's on my website, and the column's called Beyond Liquid Courage.
I meant to mention that in the intro, so thank you for bringing it up. I'm so glad you did. I will put a link to that in the show notes as well in case anybody wants to send in a question or just catch up, you know? And like, cause I love reading advice columns. I'm like so into it. So thank you so much. This is so valuable. So thank you so much for taking the time, and thank you to everyone for being here. Remember to do the things, rate, review, subscribe. And I'm just so grateful that we get to have these conversations. Share it with a friend if you thought of someone, because that is where growth happens. Just like Tawny said, when we talk about it, that just brings it into our reality and brings it more presence. So that is where magic happens. So go for it. Have the uncomfortable conversations and grow. So thank you so much, Tawny. Thank you to everyone listening. Till next time.
This has been the Amy Edwards Show from Overcome Studios. Remember to rate, review, and subscribe. And thank you so much for being here. Sign up for our newsletter at amyedwards.com.